Welcome, everyone. Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual and our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. I'm going to ask Patty to come back up to the podium to introduce our speaker. Patty, she'll tell you.
Thanks, Tim. I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. And you guys have a real treat tonight. Rachel is my sponsee. She's funny, she's smart, she's loving, she's crazy as shit, so she belongs here. But one of the most honest and willing members of AA I've ever met. Even if she's screaming and crying at first about doing it, she eventually does it. And I've watched her evolve into this really cool, incredible member of AA. And with that, I give you Rachel.
Hey y'all, I'm Rachel, I'm an alcoholic. Gotta get my priorities straight here. Hold on a second. Okay, I think we'll be alright now. My sobriety date is October 17th of 2010. And I have a sponsor, she has a sponsor. I have sponsored women in the past, I don't currently have any sponsees. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't take any on. My home group is the 11 o'clock Bridge Builders meeting here at NABA in this room. And anyway, so I guess I'll get into it. I was born November 10th, 1985, in Virginia, in the southwestern part of Virginia in the mountains. I was born to a very loving mother and father, although they're both alcoholics, like me. My mom is recovering and has been recovering for 18 years now, and my dad is still out there. So, anyway, when I was about 2, we moved to Georgia from Virginia, just me and my mom. She got a divorce from my dad, which was good because I think, from what I hear, they fought a lot, and it was pretty traumatic, and I'm sure it was fun at times, too, and it was just everything, but it was too traumatic to raise a kid in, so she had to leave. And we came to Georgia, and that is where, okay, so my mom married her second husband. Sorry, Mom, I'm telling your story. Okay, sorry. That is actually, you know, that was a big part of my life. I don't really talk about that part now because it doesn't really matter. Like, but I used to when I was a little kid, I shared about it a lot. That was not a bad experience for me. Like, I don't remember much because I was between, like, 3 and 5. But I did have 2 older step-siblings when my mom married this guy. And that's where a lot of sort of, I think, my people-pleasing thing came in, because they were a good bit older than me. I think the boy, he was about 5 years older than me, and she was about 7 years older than me. And you know, I just wanted to please them, and I would do stuff. They would get me into a shitload of trouble. They were the reason I said fuck. Sorry, Mom. I got my mouth washed out with soap that time, and the reason that I cut all my Barbie's hair, because my brother told me it would grow back, got spanked for that. What else? Oh, we had one of those like bikes, like the exercise bikes where the wheels, it used to go around. It would have this like this pulley kind of system, and I would put, they thought it was funny that I put my new tennis shoes on there when I rode the bike real fast, and I wore the sole, I mean, off of my brand new tennis shoes. Got spanked for that. Yeah, it was traumatic. So anyway, I kind of learned after a certain point that I wasn't going to listen to these two anymore because they were devious as hell, and I was just getting in trouble a lot. So, but anyway, that marriage didn't last very long, and then me and Mom moved in with my grandmother, who had a house up the street, and I love her. She's very loving as my mom's mom. And from there, Mom stayed single for a while. She'd date guys, and I hated that. I mean, I freaking hated it. Everybody was just me and my mom, and that's how it's always going to be. And I didn't have any room for any other man being in our life. So after we moved in with Nanny for a while, we moved out to Auburn, Georgia, and that's where we lived together in our own house for a little while until my mom met my stepdad. He's been my stepdad for 21 years now, and he is a really, really good man. And I really feel like my life kind of started turning to like a more stable kind of foundation after my mom married my stepdad when I was about 8. Before then, you know, I would get in trouble in school a lot. Every report card I know, it says talks too much on it, because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to school, and I didn't want anybody to tell me what to do. I wanted to have fun. I would always pick like one little girl or one little boy to like be my best friend out of every class. I can remember this very clearly. And we would get into trouble together, and it was just more fun that way. I wasn't ever groups of, like friends with big groups of kids. I just kind of would pick my little best friends, and we'd get into a shitload of trouble. And I didn't mean to. I just wanted to have fun, and I did not like following the rules at all. That is one thing that was for sure. So anyway, after Mom and Dad got married, we moved around this area, and that's the rest of my growing up was done around here. I went to Hawthorne Elementary and Henderson Middle and Lakeside High School. And in that time, you know, I didn't straighten up too much because I found out, you know, during middle school it was easier to lie than to have to follow the rules. So I'd start lying. Started lying about my homework being done because it took me forever to finish my homework. I hated it. I freaking hated school. School is awesome when it's like stuff you really want to learn about, and I can stick in there with the best of them when it's interesting, but I could not with a lot of subjects, like math in particular. Anyway, but middle school was where a lot of the kind of behavioral stuff started. Smoked pot for the first time in middle school, went to a bunch of parties where there was alcohol in middle school, and my mom was like, she kept it on lockdown in the house. Like, if parents weren't over at these other kids' houses, she would know. She would talk to the parent when I went there, but still this stuff was going on at these places. The parents would just let us have the run of the basement, and we'd do whatever we wanted down there. And I guess I should mention, too, I was always, like, curiosity killed the cat for some reason. I'd go visit my dad for 2 weeks every summer up in Virginia, and he got married right away because he can't live without a woman. And he married a hairdresser, and he's still married to her. And I would sit in the shop at the hair salon every day because he would work and my stepmom would work, so it was easier for me to go with her. And I was about 11 the first time I smoked a cigarette. I was just always very curious about, like, what was going on. All those girls in the shop smoked, and when one girl left her cigarette burning to go take care of a hair color or something, I picked it up and took a couple puffs off of it. Who knows if I really inhaled or not, but that just explains me to a T. Like, I've always had this want to, like, ooh, what's that like? What's that about, you know? So anyway, I thought I was pretty young to be doing that. My first drunk, that would be freshman year of high school. I was over at a girlfriend's house, and her parents went out for a party for a few hours. And, I mean, they were going to be back at, like, 11:30, and it was probably, like, around 9 when they left. And I was always going talking people into it. I feel like, I don't think Roseanne would have done that, but I talked her into getting to her dad's liquor cabinet. He drank a lot. He had a lot of liquor, and we just took shots off of a bunch of different bottles. And I didn't know, you know, I'm 14. I had no clue how much would get you drunk, how fast that's supposed to happen. I took about 4 or 5 shots within 15 minutes. which got me obliterated. Let me tell you, I was just sitting, like, we danced around for a while, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. And I sat down on the couch, and it hit all of a sudden. I was watching Roseanne sitting on the AIM Instant Messenger, because that's what we did in middle school back in 1999 and 2000. And I puked all over her parents' brand new leather couch. It was hideous. It was horrible. And my ankle was twisted from cross country. And so she helped me hobble down the hallway, I guess, because I got into the bathtub somehow. And I continued to dry heave for a long time. And she kept trying to feed me, and it come right back up. I mean, it was not pretty at all. And finally, she got me in bed, and she made me put one leg down on the floor. I don't know how she knew that. She had an older sister, so I guess she was experienced. I'm like, okay, I'll put my leg on the floor. The room is spinning pretty hard right now. I passed out, and I woke up a few hours later. I'm sure people know what I'm talking about, where you get so wasted or drunk, like you wake up wide awake, like when it finally wears off. And the room was still spinning. It was sickening. I felt horrible the next day. It didn't stop me, though. I mean, there was many other times when I'd have little girls come over, and I knew their parents had liquor cabinets. So I'd say, take this water bottle and just fill up the water bottle out of all the bottles, and we'll have a good time. And one time, Mom and Dad had gone out, and I had two girlfriends come over, and one had done that. And we got drunk as little monkeys and put studs all over the kitchen floor and water, and we're slipping, sliding around. Had it all cleaned up by the time they got back, too, though. I mean, I was good at sneaking. But I thought Mom would probably be, like, happy that I did that, so I told her anyway. I don't know. Nothing makes sense. My life is, like, an oxymoron. So, anyway, going on, I did things like snuck and smoke. I snuck and drank when I could. But, again, my mom was pretty, she kept on it. Like, I could not go out and party with the cool kids at their house because she knew what they were about by that time. She had heard enough stories and things get around, I guess, to the parents. And so I would sneak out. I guess the night at a girlfriend's house, and I'd sneak out from there and go to the party house. I did that a few times. One time, we took my girlfriend's dad's car, and he didn't even know it. And we had parked outside this house, and I don't know what she did. I think she turned the key, but the car wasn't on, so the brakes didn't work. She rolled it right down into this car parked in front of her because we were parked on a hill. And, oh, my God, I felt shit because it was a brand new, like, Mazda Millennia. And I was like, oh, my God, there's no way that her dad is not going to see this. But he didn't, so we're good. Sorry, I was just thinking about, should I do a mingle? Not. Mom's bored. Anyway, on through high school, fast forward, I guess, to senior year, my girlfriend, her brother had just, he was quite a bit older than her, maybe 10, 12 years older than her, opened up a bar in Buckhead. So we got to go and lay it down. Our drinks were paid for until we turned 21. I don't know what was the magic thing about that number, but we had to start paying for our drinks after that. Before then, he would just let us drink in the cop at the door. He was cool. I mean, he didn't care how old we were. So, I mean, use your imagination. You can figure out how that turned out. I mean, it was a lot of fun, and I did have fun drinking. A lot of my drinking was about, let's go have a party. Let's go find the party. That's how it was. In high school, it was weird because I had lied so much to my mom to, like, get by with crap about my grades, about my homework, and all this stuff. She actually trusted me so much that she let me, on my 16th birthday, get a tattoo down in Florida, because if you signed some kind of release form, they let you do that. Oh, man, this shit hits a fan, because on my 17th birthday, they took me and a couple girlfriends up to hell, and my parents did. Me and my mom and my dad, my little brother and sister, because I had a brother and sister by this time, took me and two girlfriends up to Helen, and they got us our own room at the Super 8 Motel, and they got themselves a room. And we went out. It was fun. We got the old-timey pictures done. We went out to a nice dinner. But that wasn't, it's never enough for me. You know, that wasn't enough just to go in and watch movies and be goofy and do makeup and crap like that at the hotel room afterwards. We went down to the pool and saw some guys walk by. And so that's all she wrote. They lived in the residence of the Super 8 back behind Helen, Georgia. It was cool. Mom checked us in and thought we were all down for the night, and we got ready. I mean, we got dolled up and walked out the door, and the door shut behind us. I said, okay, who has a key card? No key card. And I said, oh, we are effed. So we went and tried to get another one from the front desk. No deal. We saw these guys sitting out in front of their room in their lawn chairs just watching the cars go by. I don't know, on the second floor of the Motel 8, I guess that's what they like to do for fun. I'm not sure. But we asked them if we could borrow some T-shirts. I mean, 16 and 17-year-old girls asking these guys down the way if we could borrow some T-shirts to put on over our stuff, wet them, and say that we had like a water fight and got locked out of the room because we had just gotten out of hand. That story worked, so we're still good. And then I, by the way, Mom and Dad, can we have some NyQuil because I'm not feeling too good and it's going to help me sleep better. So you can imagine what was, we were taking shots of NyQuil because we had no alcohol. So took a few shots of NyQuil, redid our hair and makeup, and then found these guys at the back at the residence of the Super 8 Motel. There's about 13 guys in there. Some of them were our age, some of them were a little bit older, all on probation. I mean, every single one of them. They had run out of booze. My friend Gabrielle, she was smoking this little roach that they had. I mean, they were out of everything. They had partied through it. There was a guy running around there. He was going out to the air conditioning unit to get some Freon to huff it. I mean, they were partying. Yeah. And that was a really funny night. I'm sorry. It was funny until the cops showed up. So when the cops showed up, I knew I was really screwed. I knew I was really screwed. Like, my career was over. All the lying was going to have to come out. You know, I woke up my mom, and she was like, you know, frazzled, like, oh my God, what happened? What's going on? What's happened? Oh my God, shit. I said, Mom, the cops are here. And she looked at me, and she said, I hate you. And I was like, oh God, that hurts. So we went back down there, and we got all our IDs, and we showed them, and they didn't take us to jail because of the fact my mom came down to claim us. And we went back up to our room, and my mom continued to tell us how we were a bunch of little babies and how she's going to have to sleep with us in our hotel room that she got us because how we're little babies and, you know, if we could act our age and not be such little babies that she wouldn't have to sleep with us, and we were waking up and getting the hell out of hell in first light, and we did. And she told those girls' mamas exactly what was going on with them. And I think Michelle got beaten or something. Her dad did not like it. I mean, when my mom saw how many guys we were with down there, nothing was going on. I mean, it would have been if there was a lot of booze. But anyway, so there always had to be an extra party no matter what my parents did for me. Was I had to go find whatever I wasn't supposed to be doing and do that because that's where the fun is. So anyway, all the lying came out to my mom about how, you know, like the year before, sophomore year of high school, my boyfriend had actually wrecked my car. We spun around and went into a ditch on the way to Nopi. If anybody knows what that is, it's little like rice burning car thing show. And I took the ticket for him because I was scared to tell anybody that he was driving my car. And my mom was just like, what else? Just, you know, take a Mack truck and hit me because of all the stuff that was coming out to her. And I still feel bad about that because that was, it wasn't fun. So anyway, and I remember doing things like this is just a pure example of the stuff that, you know, the alcohol was poured onto my already seeming character defects, and I got worse. Like, things happened, I got worse. My jealousy issues went out of control. Like, I've got other stuff that was underlying, and alcohol exacerbated all of that. And I remember one time, you know, me and my girlfriend were riding down the road, and it was like a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit, and I hit 100 on that road. And she wanted to kill me when we got out of the car, and I thought it was fun, you know? It was like a thrill for me, and she wanted to absolutely murder me, and I thought, I don't really get it. But looking back now, that was dangerous. We could have flipped the car. We could have died, like, easily, because it was not a good road to be going 100 miles an hour on. Just that kind of behavior. And so, anyway, I went to massage school right out of high school, graduated high school, went straight into massage school, dated a guy long distance who lived in Florida, and then moved down there with him right before my 20th birthday. And that was a wreck. That lasted about 5 months, and then I had to move out with somebody else. And I moved in with a girl who I met by my employer. I was working for a chiropractor down there doing massage therapy for him. And moved in with her, and that's, I felt really isolated because I had moved down there to Florida to be with this guy, and I didn't really have any friends. And so my roommate, she'd go back to Ontario for the summer because she was just in school down there. So she'd go back to Canada, and I was by myself. So I was going out by myself a lot. Stuff that was not safe. There was a bar down there in Florida called the Watering Hole. And it was like old country bar. I mean, there were some real winners in there. And I met a guy from up around where I was from. I'm from Galax, Virginia, and he was from up in Roanoke. And so we became fast friends and stuff like that. And it's just weird. I've had so many flashbacks come back to me since I knew I was going to have to tell my story. And since my sponsor told me not to think about it at all, I don't know what the hell I'm even saying right now. But at least I don't feel nervous anymore. That's really cool because that is seriously like a promise coming true for me. I cannot in high school read from a book at my desk out loud in front of the class. I would go into freaking panic. My heart would be like beating so hard out of my chest I could not even breathe. So anyway, this is pretty cool that I'm up here right now. I don't like doing this crap. But I know it's not about me, even though it is about me tonight. Okay, so I'm down in Florida. Mom's like, why the hell are you down there? Come back. You know, I had a lot of fun in Florida. We met some country boys from North Florida. Me and my roommate, we'd go party with them when she was in town. And I did have a lot of fun. I drank a lot down there. I dated another guy who drank a lot. And it almost scared me how much he drank. But I just wasn't progressed to that point. And to tell you the truth, my mom being in the program so long, I had been coming to meetings since I was in high school. My mom was giving me stuff like 4 steps when I had a problem with a boyfriend or my friend was being a bitch or something. She'd be like, do a 4-step on it. I'm like, sure, 4-step. My friends would ask me, oh, what are you doing for stuff like that? Oh, I just do a 4-step. Do it. You'll probably be in there one day because, believe me, I take alcoholic friends. But anyway, so I was already had a real feeling for this program, and I really related. When I sat in meetings with Mom, I liked it. I thought people were funny. They're sick and twisted. Humor made me laugh. I like that kind of stuff. That's what kind of family I come from. We are messed up, and I sort of like it. And so my mom fucked up my drinking. I mean, she did. I had fun for a while, but I did come in right before my 25th birthday. So something went terribly wrong before I could do way too much damage. After I moved back to Georgia, I got right back in with my little buckhead bar friends, and we'd go out bar hopping, and that's what we like to do. I did not go to these little disco clubs where you dance all night. I did like to dance, but I would just do it in the bar to the jukebox music. I just liked that whole atmosphere. It felt like a family in there, you know? And that's how I feel about this place. So this is like my family, and this is a place where I feel safe and I feel comfortable. And that's how I felt when I went out at night down there with her and my friends that I had been drinking with for a while. So I started doing that again, and then I'm a serial monogamist, so of course this was boyfriend after boyfriend after boyfriend. I always kept a boyfriend because of, honestly, my low self-worth issues and my daddy issues, you know, because I've got a dad who's still an alcoholic. He lives in Virginia. He drinks every day. I just found out from my brother-in-law. I didn't know that. I thought he was more of like a dry drunk, so that's why he's such an asshole. But he does still drink every day, so now I'm sort of like, why are you such an asshole? Drink more, please. So... But that's another good one. I sort of want to, oh, gosh, that's great. Stop talking about drinking. What happened right before I came in was I think I had, like, sort of a slight nervous breakdown. I wanted to kill myself. I called my mom, and I told her that I did not want to live anymore. And she went freaking hysterical. And she told me that if we wanted to go to the hospital and tell them that they'd put me in cuffs right then and take me away, throw me in the back of the paddy wagon, take me to the insane ward place. And I didn't do that because that scared the piss out of me, to be honest with you. I didn't want to be handcuffed and taken down to the freaking whatever. I didn't want to do that. So I just kind of started control drinking more. And it took me a while to figure out, like, what the hell is going on? Like, am I really doing this? Am I really an alcoholic? I don't know. The odds are really on my side as far as my family goes. I've got great-grandfathers. I've got my mom's sister. My dad is definitely one. My dad's brother's probably one. You know, it just runs in my family rampant. And so I just figured if I was feeling like that, that there's got to be something. Something has to change. And I grew up in a really cool church, like a hippie church. I never had a problem with God. It was like love everybody. And it was, there was nothing wrong with, I mean, we hardly talked about hell or anything like that. I had a really cool church experience. So if that could have helped me and saved me from addiction, then it would have. But it didn't. And I still felt like I wanted to die. I did not want to be on this planet anymore. I just didn't see the point. And I could not get grateful in any sort of way. I was not grateful for anything. I had a cool car. I had a good job. I had all these things, but it was never enough. So I finally picked up my white chip October 17th, 2010, like I said. And this program has saved my life, and it continues to, because I continue to work the steps, and I continue to talk to my sponsor when I feel like shit is hitting the fan, or I'm about to explode, or my anxiety is skyrocketing. I cannot say enough about, like, how much fun I have had in sobriety. I mean, holy hell. When I got here, I was like, what the hell am I going to do anymore? This is not going to be fun. I mean, all my fun is going away, like all my partying. I have partied in sobriety just as hard as I ever partied out there, and I did not have a hangover to show for it, or a one-night stand, or a black eye, or anything bad. I mean, it has been so cool. I'm going to go through the steps a little bit. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, I just talked about that. Feeling like you don't want to live anymore is pretty fucking unmanageable, if you ask me. That's not so good. And there was stuff to happen. You know, it wasn't like it was all gravy. I went to a massage one Saturday morning because I had a Saturday morning appointment early, and I was drunk because it was Cinco de Mayo. And was just planning to go out for Mexican, but ended up at another Mexican bar where he knew Jose had some tequila straight from the South America in the back, you know, like a little wooden barrel or something. So we took shots all night. And I had to go to work, and I made myself do that because I just felt like I had to. And I almost puked on that lady, and I'm not kidding. And that is a really bad feeling. You do not want to massage somebody for an hour and feel like you're about to puke on them. It is. That's just not fun. And I never did that again. It was horrible. And I no-showed on the same client 3 times. I did not show up for her appointment 3 times. She wanted Saturdays. And I'm like, that's just not convenient for me. So what do? I don't schedule you on a Monday through Friday. I just don't show up. I gave her 3 free massages for that. There was hell going on in my life. I mean, there was definitely stuff that I was having to pay for with my drinking. It went all honky-dory. Not to mention, you know, like, if my mom was worried about if I'd come home at night. I lived with my mom and dad still a lot from 20 to 25. I lived with them a good deal. And I'd go out. And I'd go out Friday night. And I'd sleep all day Saturday. And I'd go back out Saturday night. It was never enough for me. And if my girlfriends couldn't go out, I'd lie to my parents and say, yeah, I'm meeting some girlfriends out. And I'd go out to, like, Cowboys and Kennesaw by myself, not knowing a freaking soul. I mean, that's just stupid. It really is stupid when I look back at it. So anyway, back to the steps. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I never had a problem with God. I loved God. I knew of God. But I did not use God ever, like how I have used God in this program. I have a God of my own understanding. And God can be whatever you want it to be, just as long as it's not you. And I always, of course, I could have faith that God could restore me to sanity. I have no problems with God. And so that's what I did, you know. I already believed in that, so I didn't have to come to belief. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. That I think, just took place with me coming to meetings and picking up a white chip that showed my willingness to turn my life over to God. I can't do this by myself. I want to kill myself on my own will and drink a lot and do things that are self-deprecating, and it's not a good scenario. So just coming into the program was like me doing step 1, 2, and 3 right there. Just being willing and finding a sponsor and willing to work the steps and do what's suggested of me. Then I had to do my searching and fearless moral inventory, which was a lot of fun. There was a lot of people that I felt victimized by, my dad being a huge one. You know, some things that I couldn't control when I was a little girl, like some people that I had to forgive for stuff that I couldn't control. And, you know, I didn't really have a part in those things. Like, I had to just say, you know, God, please take this from me, or help me to forgive. You know, I don't really have to worry about the forgiveness part. I just have to ask for God's help, as far as I can understand it. That's all that's expected of me. I've just been willing and ask for God's help, and the forgiveness will come when it comes. I'll start seeing things from a different standpoint, a different view, so that I can have a better understanding about, like, maybe what those people were going through when they grew up. You know, just that extra, it's not all about me attitude. Like, those people had a life. They were raised by people who maybe beat them, or who knows what happened to them when they were growing up, because we were all just little kids, and we still, you know, we have that innocent part of us, and I personally am really sensitive. So I had a lot of people on my fourth step, and I made a lot of amends, even stuff that was small that I didn't think I'd have to make an amends for. Yeah, you got to do that. And I was like, oh my God, are you serious right now? I haven't talked to that girl in like 5 years. I don't want to talk to her, but I had to do it. And it was like the most rewarding thing ever. You know, one of my drinking buddies, the one whose brother owns the bar, I sat down with her at Starbucks, and we had been not speaking for a long time, and I hated her and she hated me, and that was about all it was. And I just sat down with her and I said, I just want to tell you that if there is anything that I ever did, which I honestly didn't know what I did to her, I was just kind of like, screw you, if you don't like me, well, screw you too. I said, if there's anything that I ever did to you to hurt you or make you feel less than, I'm sorry. And she accepted my apology, and she, you know, vented a little bit, and I just sat there and I shut up and I didn't say anything. It's not about the fight anymore. At this point, it's me saving my own ass. Because just like they were saying in a meeting I was in recently, you know, forgiveness is not about the other person. For you to have hate in you is hurting you. I mean, for me to have hate in myself is just hurting me. Hate at my father, hate at anybody. And I don't want to carry that around anymore. It's like sticking a rock in your pocket every time you find a new resentment, and it just gets heavy to carry after a while. So I had a really beautiful amends with my dad, though. It was so cool. It wasn't like a, hey, Dad, I'm sorry if there's anything I ever did, asshole. I made him a memory box. And I painted it, and I put cowboy stuff on it, because he's a cowboy, and he has horses, and he's got sheep, and he's got cows, and he's just that kind of guy. He's just like a caveman cowboy type. And so I didn't put any caveman stickers on there, just the cowboy ones. And painted it and put little pictures of me when I was a baby and him and, like, the little picture things on the side of it. And I wrote. Now, I didn't have very many. But I wrote down, like, the most special times that we had. And they're pretty simple, like going and buying Mountain Dew at the store and a freaking, you know, beef jerky or something. But that was fun to me when I was a kid, you know. And that was my daddy. He still is. And I really look up to him. So anyway, I write down these memories on these pieces of paper, and I stuck them in the box, and I gave it to him. And I think that just floored the shit out of him, because he hardly calls me on my birthday, so I probably just get him, like, a sarcastic card for his birthday. That's the best I've ever done. I think he really liked that, you know? And it wasn't long after that that we went out to this land and took the four-wheeler out. Sorry, y'all. Huh? And I actually did have a really good day with him, and I was like, if this is all that this is for, just have this one good day with my dad where he's not, you know, acting like a shithead, and we're getting along, and we're laughing, and we're having fun, and riding four-wheelers up in the mountains and stuff. It was so cool. There wasn't anything bad that happened. Listened to the Mark Chestnut CD of Autumn all the way home. I mean, it was really fun, and I had nothing to complain about. I mean, that's the only memory that I take from him being on this earth. That is the best for me. And I think it did have, it came from that peace offering, from me making something for him, from my heart, taking my time on it, making it for him, and him accepting that. That's, I know that that's where, why we had that day afterwards. And it was so cool. So anyway, that was one of my cool four steps. Well, it's not my four step, that was my men's part. Fifth, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, which was me telling my sponsor all this stuff, which I sort of skipped over. I had to go sit down with somebody and tell them everything that had gone on, anything that was on my plate that I needed to get off so that I could be clear again, so that I could be, like, refreshed and renewed and open and willing to accept, you know, the spiritual concepts of this program that are going to keep me alive, and they will keep keeping me alive as long as I don't, you know, take a drink or fuck it up somehow, which I'm trying, and I'm doing all right so far. Six, we're entirely ready. No, am I at six yet? Admitted to God, to ourselves, yeah. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So we went and we listed all my defects of character that came from these amends, and, there was a few of them, you know. One of them that was sort of stood out was like my jealousy and my possessiveness. And I guess that's an envy trait. You know, just that came from that. You know, one night when I was drinking, I got a little bit more delusional than I am already. And we're already got the basket full. We don't need any more delusion added into my... whatever I'm perceiving on earth, it's already pretty, I mean, it's crazy. Like, when you stay sober long enough, you're like, oh, that's not good. You really realize how crazy you really are. And I'm not kidding you. This is for real. I mean, I got it, just as an example. I punched my boyfriend one time, one of my boyfriends, in the stomach really hard because I perceived that he was flirting with our couple friend's girlfriend. Like, it was too much for me. So I just went. I mean, I punched him as hard as I could. I know it had to hurt. I'm not, I mean, I'm small, but I can punch. As you all know. that was one thing that wasn't very pretty. I mean, and I punched my girlfriend for taking a shot. I went out to the bar, control drinking. I knew I had to be up for work the next morning. I had an employer. I was working for a chiropractor at that time while I was going to massage school. I was really pissed that I had to be out there. That was my scene. I liked it out there. And I was not going to drink. I might have, like, had a beer. I don't even know that I started there because I knew that I would just get on a roll. And I had this guy. He bought around the shots for everybody. He's like, you want one? And I was like, yeah, I'll take one. And I was just like, God, I'm really going to take it. Then my girlfriend comes up, and she's just like, oh, yeah. And I'm like... And it really pissed me off. I'm like, that is my shot. Can you see my name on it? Which isn't there, but it's definitely there because he pointed at me and asked, do you want a shot? And I said, yes. I just wasn't going to take it yet. And then she pushed me back, and then the friend's like, hey, what's going on over here? Because it really, that's just some of the stupid shit that would happen. I want to be rid of that. I want to be rid of my jealousy. It only puts me in hell. I feel so in hell when I'm ever, you know, even imagining stuff in my head that may or may not really be going on. I've had to call my sponsor a lot about that and just kind of get clear about, you know, what's reality and what's not reality, and get right back on the right track, because I can sort of go cuckoo and then we have violence. Number seven. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Yes, I want this gone. Eight. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends with them all. Kind of went over that. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. That's another thing that's good. You know, if, like, I this never happened, but it was good to know that, like, if it, there was a wrong that's going to hurt somebody, it's going to hurt them. You might want to talk to somebody about making that amends. That's what a sponsor is there for, to bounce things off of them so that you don't just go off at the mouth, oh, yeah, I have to be free of all this that I've done in the past, and I don't care who I hurt, but I got to apologize to everybody for it. That is not the way to go. And I don't really have too much experience in that because I just didn't want to say sorry anyway. So I just did exactly what my sponsor told me to do with that. Continue to take this is one of my favorite steps. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. I love the spot check inventory because I have to check myself. I know when I'm going down that road. I can feel it. It feels like hell, and it's coming fast. And I do not make the situation any better. So when whatever it is, whatever the situation is, when I feel like I'm really going to hell, because I can still go there without drinking, I have to call somebody. I have to call somebody that I trust and that I know has got some experience, strength, and hope, and bounce it off of them and, you know, make sure that I don't really get myself into some trouble. Because the danger in that is I might actually drink again. That's the danger in that. If I go so far down the road, then I'm just going to say, fuck it anyway, and who really cares, and let's go drink. Like, that's where my head goes sometimes. I just say, fuck it all. That reminds me of that Robin. Sorry, y'all. I have to piss on it. Robin Williams died tonight, and that made me really sad. Yeah, he committed suicide. That better be a real source, Chris. That was a real source. Okay, yeah, he did. And that really, I mean, I learned that like 20 minutes before I got here. And he was doing a comedy skit one time. He was talking about these pills that you could take when you just want to forget about everything. It's called Fuck It All. Oh my God, he is hilarious. I love that man. I'm sorry that he's gone now because he was really, truly a very cool individual, and I wish that he just could have got it, you know, in a program somewhere without taking his life first, because I can understand and I know that helplessness and hopelessness and pain. I have seriously been there, and it's not a good place to be. Thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. With this one, my first year of sobriety, I kid you not, I prayed every day. Not, God, will you please grant me this? God, will you please do that for me? I prayed just to stay sane, like, God, I will not mind be done. That was a very simple prayer. I would do it when my head was going round and round and not getting all crazy, like at work when I'm massaging people and you have to be very quiet for an hour or 90 minutes, that your head goes crazy places and you can't, there's nowhere you can go. You're just massaging away and time is passing really slowly and you feel like you want to explode. So, God, thy will not mind be done. God, thy will not mind be done, over and over and over and over again until I wanted to puke. But while I was saying that, the other thoughts weren't running around in my head because I was mantraing this. And, dang, I can't believe it's already gone. That's awesome. Whew, thank you, Jesus. All right. So that's about the prayer thing. And meditation, I'm telling you what, like, I have this thing on my phone. Like, you can do, like, Slacker Radio or Pandora. I put in Deepak Chopra. He has got some really cool-ass meditations. And all you have to do, it's free. It's like a radio on your phone. You just put in Deepak Chopra, and he says the most coolest things, doesn't he, Mom? And it just feels so good, and you're meditating. I mean, it's like an active meditation. You'll have to sit down and be quiet. All right, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I have sponsored a lot of women. They have all gone back out. And that's just, you know, that's, we have a choice. We have a choice to get it now or not get it now. I don't want to do any more exploring. I know where it goes, and I know that it's only going to be hell and probably make me more suicidal if I go back out and start self-medicating myself, which is all alcoholism is, I think. It's self-medication for stuff that's already underlying that's wrong. So anyway, I do believe in carrying the message, and I do through leading meetings or telling our story like I am tonight. And this is a really awesome program, and thank you guys so much for listening to me.
Rachel, thank you for your cool-ass message.
First I slip, and then I crib to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, track for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something that sets me free. Take me where the promises are.